The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, from 1949, USO's On With the Show, starring George Murphy, Jack Carson, and Eddie Bracken. We'll also hear the state of American humor with Ben Grauer and featuring Fred Allen. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, the state of American humor with Ben Grauer and featuring Fred Allen. Right now, On With the Show, presented by the USO from 1949, starring George Murphy, Jack Carson, and Eddie Bracken, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Stand by, America. We're coming to you with a salute from the USO. To the guys in the service and the hospitals, too, so gather around and on with the show.
This is Bob Forrest speaking and inviting you to relax and enjoy yourself as we bring you a salute from show business, beamed to the veterans in the hospitals and the young men who are a part of our peacetime army. In the coming months, Veterans Hospital Camp shows will bring live entertainment and music to veterans hospitals and army camps all over the country. And for the next half hour, we're going to present some of the stars who will furnish this entertainment. So on with the show as we present your master of ceremonies, George Murphy.
Embrace me, my sweet embraceable you. Embrace me, you irreplaceable you. Just one look at you, my heart grows tipsy in me. You and you alone bring out the gypsy in me. I love all the very charms about you. Above all, I want my arms about you. Don't be a naughty baby. Come to Papa, do. My sweet embraceable. You.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and greetings from all of us to all of you. You know, getting together a half-hour show of top entertainment is a pretty big job, especially when it's for such a good cause, a cause like this one. Those lads in the hospitals and in the army camps can feel mighty lonely at times, so it's up to us to make them forget their loneliness. Well, like I said, it was a tough job trying to put this show together all by myself, so I called in a couple of mighty capable guys to help me. They're both old hands at this entertainment business, and when I explained what this show was all about, they were only too happy to jump in and lend a hand. And here they are, Jack Carson and Eddie Bracken.
Oh, Pardon me. My name is Eddie Bracken.
The infirmary is right through there.
You don't understand. I heard a rumor that you were putting on a radio show.
Yeah, where did you hear that rumor?
Oh, the usual place. A couple of fellas were... A couple of fellas were discussing it while I was washing my hands.
Yeah. Well, it's... They beat you slightly, but it's all right. It's true. We were thinking of putting on a radio program. Why?
Well, you probably need an announcer with pep and vitality, so here I am.
Well, I'm sorry, son, but you won't do. We were planning on getting an announcer with blood.
Oh, I got blood. It's just inside of me where it doesn't show.
Hey, wait a minute. I got a great idea. I can't use you as an announcer, but I do need a singer.
A singer?
Sure. You look sick enough to be a wonderful crooner.
Who, me?
Sure. Your cheeks have just that right flush of green. There's only one thing, kid. Do you think you have swoon power?
Swoon power? Oh, yeah. What does swoon mean?
Well, that's when you faint and fall on the floor.
Paul, I do that every morning. Yeah.
What a discovery you're going to turn out to be. Now, let's see. We'll need a bow tie for your Adam's apple, of course. Have you got a bow tie, kid?
I haven't even got an Adam's apple.
Oh, that's great. You're going to be a much bigger sensation than Frank Sinatra.
Oh.
How much do you weigh, son?
98 pounds.
Yeah, well, don't worry. Exercise will take off some of that.
But, say, Mr. Carson, haven't you overlooked one little item?
What's that?
I can't sing.
Haven't you ever done any singing at all?
Well, when I was a little boy, I sang in the choir, but my voice was so high, they put a dress on me and made me sing with the girls.
They put you in with the girls?
Yeah, but by the time I was old enough to enjoy it, my voice changed.
Well... You won't have to worry about inexperience. I'll teach you how to sing myself. I know all about singing, you know.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You know, my sister studied voice. Yeah, she studied the Hungarian method.
Yeah, well, that's kid stuff. That's for beginners. Now, the way I teach...
Well, I wish you'd explain what the Hungarian method is to me.
The Hungarian method?
Yeah.
Explain it? Oh, explain it. Yes. The Hungarians start a note way down in the epiglottis.
Way down there, did they?
Well, I have to. A note's got to have a running start to get past one of those Hungarian dinners.
I still don't understand the
You what?
I say we still don't understand the principle of the method.
Oh, yes, the principle. Well, you see, from there, the tone moves up diagonally through the diaphragm, swings around the auditory chamber, and then makes a left turn at the esophagus...
It makes a... how do you know which way it turns?
It holds out one tonsil and be quiet.
Mr. Carson, I don't think this singing job is a thing for me.
Don't say that, kid. I'll have the contract ready for you first thing in the morning.
Oh, well, I'm not sure I want the job. My father told me about the temptation a young boy might meet up to in show business.
Oh, they're exaggerated,
yeah.
Eddie.
Yeah. Well, isn't it a fact that I might be thrown in the society of chorus girls?
Oh, no, not a chance.
Isn't it possible that seductive, adventurous women may wait for me at the stage door?
Certainly not.
You're sure about that?
Absolutely.
Then I know I don't want the job.
Wait a minute.
Thanks, fellas. It's nice to know you've both been in there pitching since USO Veterans Hospital camp shows got underway. There will be a lot more stars handing out their special brand of medicine, folks. Medicine that can do more than any doctors or pills. Oh, now wait a minute, don't get me wrong. I'm not casting any slurs on the medical profession. But if you can walk out before a line of wheelchairs and see a face drawn with pain suddenly light up with a smile, well, I think any doctor listening will know what I mean. Just to give you an example... I'm going to ask a couple of mighty fine entertainers to come out here and give you a sample of their cure-all. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Dinah Shore and Dr. Danny Kaye.
Love, it can get you in the strangest messes. It's just like touchy-tessy. You had a gal.
That's what me mama, what a gal was, Mary.
She was your best gal.
Oh, see, daddy, what a pal was, Mary.
That is, you see, what I mean is you thought she was your best gal.
Joe, the Fairfax, Joe, the Fairfax, I had a friend.
Oh, Joe, 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 the Rock of Gibraltar.
He was my best friend.
Oh, so, 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 so sweet as chocolate malta.
I told my friend about my gal, cause I thought he was my best friend.
To the Roma, to me, Roma, life was sweet.
I was a happy man.
Then came the bust up that busted my trust up, the fireworks began.
You lost your gal.
Oh, murder, Jackson, blow those blues for me.
You lost your friend.
Oh, murder, murder in the first degree.
I got a feeling that something will happen. This won't be the end. No, no, I'll find a new friend. Yes, yes, I'll find a new gal. Ho, ho, this won't be the end of me. Well, soup, well, boot, well, well, all root with a heifer, 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 and a step, step, step.
Greetings, Gabe. Hiya, Ben.
Oh, feeling great. Give me some skin.
Looking sharp.
Oh, sharp as hard.
Feeling keen.
Hey, keen as a bean.
No tears for men.
Head dry as the prairie.
No woe for Joe.
Oh, no, no, no.
No beating a grave.
Oh, nay, nay, nay.
No busted ticker.
Oh, ticker, ticker, slicker.
Well, toast me, Melba. Is this a fact?
Beat me, Daddy, and I'll hit you back. Well, zoop, well, boop, well, well, all right. Well, the heifer, 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 and step, step, step. Hey, good looking.
What is it cooking?
Feeling groovy.
Groovy as a movie.
Soft and mellow.
Mellow as a cello.
Want to be my chicken?
Now you're the clicking.
No jack, yak.
Solid jack.
Well, ration me some passion. Pitch me some woo.
On the button, glutton. Macaroon.
Well, grill me lamb chop. Well, all right.
Stop me, mama, cause it's Saturday night.
Well, zoop, well, zoop, well, well, all right. With a heifer, 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 and a step, step, step. A hitty-doodle-a-body.
Hitty-doodle-a-body.
Oh, like a casa, hoy, like a ma.
Oh, like a casa, hoy, like a ma.
Oh, j'en veux dire, quel fromage.
Oh, j'en veux dire, quel fromage.
Hi, hi.
Hi, hi.
Hum, hum.
Hum, hum.
Roof, roof. Well, zoop, well, boop, well, well, all right. With a hat, 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 hat,
hat. There, ladies and gentlemen, is a good healthy dose of that special brand of medicine I've been talking about. And is it appreciated? Well, let me read you a letter which was sent to USO headquarters in New York by a veteran in one of those hospitals. I am sending you this letter to thank you for the wonderful show you sent us last week and to tell you how much it meant to me. Before I do, I want to explain that my nurse wrote this letter for me because I lost both hands when a mine exploded in Leyte. For a long time after I got back here to the States, I guess I kind of lost faith in everything. I figured that once they stuck me in a hospital, they'd close the door on me and I'd be forgotten. You see, I don't have any family, and I figured there wasn't anybody who'd take time to visit a stranger. But that's where I figured wrong. As I've been here, folks like Bill Holden and Nancy Kelly, Peter Lorre, Marie McDonald, and a lot more have been dropping in from time to time. I can't tell you how much their visits meant to me, even if it was only to stop by my bed for a second and just say hello. That's why I had to send you this letter, and to thank you for everything, and to say God bless you all. Now, as long as we keep getting letters like that, ladies and gentlemen, we'll keep on visiting and entertaining the boys who want us. Whether it's for an audience of one or 100, we'll be there. And now, on with the show. Stepping up to join the festivities is a man who has nothing but pity for himself, Danny Thomas.
I'd like to sing a little western song for you, with the mountains in her valley. the rocks, the rills and streams in prairie and ranch country. You just ain't lived till you've lived in the West.
You a city slicker? Get out to Las Vegas. I'll bet you how the wind is going to blow next day and give you a choice of direction. They bet to live and live to bet. I swear I never got both feet off the train my first trip to Las Vegas. Some tough-looking hombre walked up to me, cased me for a split. He said, "Hold it, slicker. 2-1, you're dead." Would you believe it? I was afraid to bet. I mean, there was one bet I couldn't afford to lose. Then I had my first meal in Las Vegas with seven other men. Kind of family style. I said to the feller sitting next to me, "Would you please pass a slice of bread?" To help me, I caught him dealing from the bottom of the loaf. This was just a polite hint that there'd be a game of five card in the back room. I got to thinking, shucks, five card stud? A baby can play that game. Of course, a baby don't win, you understand, but he can play. Well, this baby didn't win either. Win? When I tell you a royal flush wasn't good enough. You got a rough idea what kind of game this was. What do you think beat my royal flush? Pair of deuces and 5, 6, 7 of hearts. And a six shooter. Fella called it Timbuktu. That was the name of the hand, Timbuktu. Around 2 o'clock in the morning, I caught the same hand myself. Pair of deuces and 5, 6, 7 of hearts. And I bet it right up to the hilt, too, brother. I bet it heavy. Fella beat me with a pair of jacks. Same size six-shooter. And he said, "I'm sorry, stranger. Timbuktu is good only once a night." Then I got really lucky. I caught six queens. You're laughing. I threw them in. I didn't even bet. And it's a dang good thing I didn't. The fella next to me had six kings. He come in third. I mean, if it's action you want, get out to Las Vegas. Shucks, that ain't the part of the West I'm talking about. I'm talking about the ranch country. Never forget riding over the range. I was riding kind of a polite horse that day. Yes, sir. That horse was so dang polite, every time we came to a fence, he let me go over first. I want to sing a little song that was doing right smart before Bing Crosby came along and made a record number. I reckon he didn't hurt her none. I reckon. That's Western talk, ma'am.
Home, 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 another rain. Where the deer and the antelope play.
Wish Crosby was here. I'd have him whistle for me. Now, you got to believe me. Honestly, this time, honestly, I'm going to sing a legitimate Western song. Beat it out for me, will you, Walter? Got my boy Walter Pop from Chicago back here at the piano. Gentlemen of the orchestra. Here goes nothing. How I love to sing about the wonders of the Golden West. 'Cause I love to sing
all about my home, about her mountains high and the valleys that I love the best and the purple sky. I could write a tone. I swear nowhere is there such beauty, and you can bet that's why the sun chose it as the place to set how I love to sing about the glory of the golden west, 'cause I love to sing all about my home. I love to sing about my home.
Thousand thanks, Danny. I'm sure there isn't a dry eye in the house. So far in this program, ladies and gentlemen, we've told you the part that we in show business will play in helping to bring entertainment to the fellas in the hospitals. Now it's your turn. That's right, you were sitting by your radios. Besides entertainment, there are the clubs, the recreation, and the spiritual guidance which the USO will provide for those of our young men who are part of our peacetime army. USO can't do the job alone. It needs the constant support of the American people, all of them, and that means you. You can help by sending your generous donations to USO. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, those boys in the veterans' hospital and in the camps need a laugh and they need a song. And just so you won't forget it, here's Michel Perrier with the orchestra to remind you that the song is you. Michel? This is George Murphy again saying thanks on behalf of the USO. So long, folks.
our thanks to George Murphy, Jack Carson, Eddie Bracken, Dinah Shore, Danny Kaye, and Danny Thomas for bringing us On with the Show. The program was conceived and produced in Hollywood by Milton Kahn and Will Scott. The orchestra was under the direction of Michelle Perrier. On with the Show was arranged through the cooperation of the Hollywood Coordinating Committee, the American Federation of Musicians, the American Federation of Radio Artists, and the United States Armed Forces Radio Service. This is Bob Forrest speaking.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio and an episode of On With the Show presented by the USO from 1949. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Right now, the State of American Humor from 1949 with Ben Grauer and featuring Fred Allen as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Living 1949. Brought to you each week at this time by NBC and its affiliated stations, convinced that a sense of humor is essential to making sense of our times, holds up its radio mirror today to reflect
the state of American humor.
And here with the customary smile on his face, a little broader than usual, is Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America.
It was Carlyle, our researchers tell us, who once said...
How much lies in laughter? The cipher key wherewith we decipher the whole man.
Yes, and Carlyle might well have added the cipher key, too, to unraveling the character of whole generations. What men laugh at and why? Someday someone will reflect the history of mankind through these. For each generation makes its own humor, and by its humor as well as by its bones and its battles shall we know it. And so, in the midst of living 1949, we examine the state of the nation by examining the state of American humor. To this end, we've sought to tickle our curiosity with the following questions.
What exactly is humor? For instance, what makes people laugh?
Does humor have a history?
What does humor do for us?
How would you rate our humor today? And what about humor tomorrow?
Questions are easily come by. Digging up the answers isn't so easy, so we had to dig up an authority. You can put away the shovel, boys. Here he is, Fred Allen.
Well, thank you, Ben Grauer, and good afternoon, students of laughter. Gosh, I wish this was night school, Ben. This is a little too early in the day for me to scintillate. Am I using the right word?
Very good, Fred.
You approve of it, eh? I only have it on approval for the afternoon. You know, comedians and night watchmen do their best work after the sun goes down. But since Brother Grauer has opened the forum, I shall do my best, naturally, to carry on. May I have the first question, please?
Well, Mr. Allen, what exactly is humor?
For instance, what makes people laugh?
Oh, an excellent question. What makes people laugh? So many times my sponsor has asked that question. Down through the ages, there have been many answers to that question. What makes people laugh? Sigmund Freud once said,
strictly speaking, we do not know what we are laughing about.
Say, Freud not only has a dialect, he seems to be a trifle confused along with it. Well, let's try one of the most amusing Americans that ever lived, Mark Twain.
The secret source of humor itself is not joy, but sorrow.
Mark's a little indefinite, too. Now, let's see. Before I was born, surely someone must have analyzed humor.
Easy does it, Sonny.
Ah, and you, sir, you are...
Josh Billings, my friend. I was telling the jokes when they was really new on Living 1849.
Ah, yes, Mr. Billings. You're one of the foremost characters in American humor. Can you help us with our question? What exactly is humor?
Why, humor is wit with a rooster's tail feather stuck in its cap. It produces laughter, which, anatomically speaking, is the sensation of feeling good all over and showing it principally in one spot.
Well, thank you, Josh Billings. That answers the $64 question. Stand by for Gabriel and the giant jackpot. And so there you have it, America. Humor is that factor in man's makeup that produces laughter and makes him feel good all over. Of course, there is no set rule as to what makes your lips turn up at the corners. That, of course, depends on what you have between your ears. But the unexpected in any situation, the incongruous, that is the basis of humor. Now, let me see. There was another part to the question.
Yes, Mr. Allen. What does humor do for us?
Oh, yes, yes, of course. What does humor do for us? And for the answer to that one, we begin where most people usually end, with this gentleman here, bearing the couch and the goatee, the psychiatrist.
People laugh to protect themselves by pretending to take lightly those things which affect them most seriously.
I see. Well, there is more truth in that, America, than psychology. Indeed, as our recent acquaintance, Josh Billings, once said...
If a man can't laugh, there's some mistake made in putting them together. And if he won't laugh, he wants as much keeping away from as a bear trap when it's set.
Well, this, according to Josh, is what humor does for us. It's a relief, a safety valve. It gets things out of our systems. And why should I bother to dig up Josh Billings just to argue about that? Which brings us to our third question.
Mr. Allen, does humor, like more respectable subjects, have a history?
There will be a brief pause here, not for station identification, but while I resent the implication that my business is not respectable, I can close my eyes now and hear the first joke that was ever cracked. The scene, somewhere around a few eons after the Ice Age. I see the forest primeval, prehistoric animals, looking like refugees from some museum with their flesh on. And finally, I see a caveman, possibly an ancestor of Jack Benny's. He's carrying the jawbone of a relative. He's meeting along one of nature's byways a second caveman. Says the first caveman to the second caveman,
Say, who that lady I see you with last night?
Answers the second caveman,
That was no lady. That was wife.
Whether or not this is truly the Adam Eve of all jokes has been subject to some dispute in the more learned circles which I seldom frequent. Personally, I can think of no other joke that could have preceded it. But once man got the idea... Once he saw how laughter made him feel good all over, like breathing, he made a habit of it, and he never afterwards gave it up. By the time the pilgrims landed at Plymouth, men and women through bitter experience had learned to laugh at almost anything. The wit of the New England Yankee is chiseled imperishably in stone, in gravestone.
Beneath this silent stone is laid a noisy, antiquated maid, who from her cradle talked till death, and ne'er before was out of breath.
It was Ben Franklin, in between tying keys to kite strings, who brought this kind of humor to its zenith. Franklin invented the first American fool character, Poor Richard with his almanac. And out of the mouth of this babe in the history of American humor came such bone-dry comments as,
"Keep your eyes wide open before marriage and half shut afterwards."
Thus off to a happy start, Americans went right on laughing into the 1800s. And like the people, the humor became independent, assertive, attacking pretensions both high and low. But when the nation began to grow and stretch its muscles westward, with the blossoming of new cities, blossomed a new humor, the humor of the frontiersman, boundless like the nation itself.
Yes, sir, it's a tall country. Why, in California, the fogs are so thick, the ships often sail right across them till they hit the Sierra Nevada mountains. Why, they even nail shingles to the fog. And it gets so cold at night, your shadow freezes on the wall, and they have to use blow torches to thaw it out.
You see, blow torches. Today's smudge pots. A gag then, it's a gag now. California weather. So taking Davy Crockett and Paul Bunyan in stride, and with Paul it's quite a stride, by 1850 American humor was out of the woods and into the minstrel halls.
Tell me which is fastest, heat or cold?
No, Julius. Which is the fastest?
Why, heat.
Heat? How so?
Because anybody can catch cold.
It was a leisurely age of leisurely humor, uncorrupted by Hooper ratings, and one which, if the good Lord had consulted me, I certainly would have been very happy to match wits in. Besides our late friend Josh Billings, one of the prime favorites of those days was Charles Brown, better known as Artemus Ward. Artemus once remarked,
"Most of the girls in Utah marry young. Brigham Young."
Of Ward and Billings, Abe Lincoln once confessed,
"For the genius to write these things, I would gladly give up my office."
Say, you know, that reminds me, I have yet to hear Truman, Harry S., say that about me. But let's not be wistful. Comes now Mark Twain. Mark Twain, who said he never saw his father smile, was truly a giant in American humor. With the kind of time on his hands that I have never known since I discovered radio, Mark casually spun his fun, much of which, thank heaven, is not suitable for radio. Mark marked a shift in American humor from the fool way of saying things to the wise way. And he it was who glorified a great American characteristic, the ability to poke fun at ourselves. Twain was a natural. He didn't work at being funny. He just naturally was funny. With progress, laugh here, folks. The leisure of the times that marked the humor of Twain went down the drain. By the turn of the century, we're entering the 20th century, just in case you've become lost as we've come along the way, the big city industrialized populace turned to the faster-moving humor of my late habitat, vaudeville.
Say, Joe, how can you stop a dead fish from smelling?
I don't know, Harry. How can you keep a dead fish from smelling?
Cut off its nose!
Like life, the pace of humor was stepped up. Everybody began to work at being funny, and the long, dragged-out humorous story shrunk to the short, snappy gag. The First World War came and went, leaving a backwash of so-called college humor, very vaudio dough. Throughout these post-war years, new names came to the fore.
W.C. Fields, Rube Goldberg, Irvin S. Cobb, Bugs Baer, to name a few.
Actors, cartoonists, writers of nonsense for nonsense' sake. But the man who truly commanded the grins of the nation, strangely enough using the old ways, was a drawling, gum-chewing guy from Claremore, Oklahoma.
Americans are getting just like Ford cars. They have all the same parts, same upholstery, and make exactly the same noises.
Will Rogers. Will Rogers, who when introduced at the White House to...
Mr. Coolidge, may I present Will Rogers?
Pardon me, I didn't catch your name.
When Will met his unfortunate death, The golden age of the jester had just arrived.
The age of newer nonsense, larger lunacy, higher goofyism, and humor gone nuts.
Fred, we really thank you for presiding at the peephole while we rattle the skeletons in the closet of American humor. But tell us, Fred, now that you've brought us up to modern times, what about the answer to our next question, namely...
Mr. Allen, how would you rate our humor today? What does it reveal about us?
Well, go ahead, my guard's down. Why don't you interview me?
Oh, no, you're the narrator on today's program.
But I'm also the authority, don't forget, Ben.
Well, I guess there's only one way out, then. On the subject of present-day humor...
Yes?
Fred Allen interviews Fred Allen.
Well, I guess this proves it. If you stay in radio long enough, you'll end up talking to yourself.
Tell me, Mr. Allen.
Yes, Fred.
How would you characterize the humor of today?
The humor of today is like the times. Mechanized, urbanized, produced in such quantity, it's downright chaotic.
Uh-huh. Why is that, Mr. Allen?
Well, look at the various demands put upon humor today. Humor for magazines, books, movies, plays, newspapers, radio.
Did you say radio, Mr. Allen?
Radio? Yes, I did say radio, sir. Radio is exactly where humor has reached its lowest ebb.
My word. And you would say, Mr. Allen?
I would say that while so-called radio humor flows unceasingly, it has lost all spontaneity. The king of the airwaves, the comedian, is rarely more than a mouthpiece for his writers. Now, witness one Jack Benny, who once confronted me with, "You wouldn't talk to me like that if I had my gag writers here."
You don't say.
Yes, I did say. But it didn't sound like Benny, but I did say. Yes, too many comedians survive on the brains of other people.
Is that bad, Mr. Allen?
Bad, Fred? Don't you ever listen to the radio?
But whose fault is it, Mr. Allen?
Well, it's nobody's fault. Radio comedians are victims of the times. Radio as a medium demands more so-called humorous material than there are creative minds to supply it.
Tell me, is it a hard life, Mr. Allen?
Is it a hard life? Is it a hard life? Have you ever thought what a radio comedian goes through in a week?
Monday.
Monday. From the moment my alarm clock rings, I begin to hear those inner voices.
You gotta be funny on Sunday.
I pull the covers up over my head. I stuff my fingers into my ears. But it's no use. The voices are always there, haunting me.
You gotta be funny on Sunday.
I jump out of bed. I flex my legs. I begin another week on the treadmill of radio.
Tuesday.
By Tuesday, I'm starting to get nervous. I reassure myself and sneak a peek at a fan letter about my last program. The fan letter reads...
Do you smell?
And back come the voices.
You gotta be funny on Sunday. You gotta be funny on Sunday.
I haul out the jokes I've been stuffing into my pockets. Notes for jokes written on subways, in movies, on lonely walks, in the midst of nightmares. I take one horrible look and send for my usual breakfast. Say, Portland, poach two aspirin on toast.
Wednesday
again, and those voices greet me. But I defy them, because Wednesday is when I meet with my writers. My writers will save me. I know they'll save me.
Well, morning, Mr. Allen.
Morning, Mr. Allen.
Morning, Mr. Allen.
Well, boys, we need plenty of jokes for Sunday.
I got one, Mr. Allen.
Yes, Bob.
How's this? Listen, who was that ladle I saw you with last night? That was no ladle. That was my wife.
Hey, that's pretty good. I like that very much. I like that very much. Yes. Here we are back with the cavemen. With these radio writers, I must seek to replace the ledger of Mark Twain. Louder grow the voices.
You gotta be funny on Sunday. You gotta be funny on Sunday.
No, 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 no.
Thursday,
we've got one joke. We need 75 more jokes to fill the script. Once again, I turn hopefully when one of my writers says...
Then you meet a guy on the street, see?
Yeah, yeah.
And he says to you, have you seen my dog?
My dog.
And you say, you mean the dog that limps with the black hair, long floppy ears, leather collar, and the spot between his eyes? He says, yes. And you say, no, I haven't seen him.
Wait a minute, Sam. Look, I can't tell that gag. That gag goes back to Voltaire.
Who's Voltaire? I stole that one from Bob Hope.
Friday, we really get into mass production humor. After the first rehearsal, the cry goes up for gags. Gags. We need more gags, man. Gags about...
babies, robbers, beauty, boats, drips, droops, dopes, dames.
To add to this bedlam, there are always those voices.
You gotta be funny on Sunday. You gotta be funny on Sunday. You gotta be funny.
Saturday.
Saturday is baked beans, more rehearsal and cutting, and of course...
you gotta be funny on Sunday!
I know!
Sunday!
You better be funny!
I'm ready.
The funniest man in America, Fred Allen!
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight I start my program with a little song entitled When They Find Out About Phenobarbital in Tennessee, It'll Be Sleepy Time Down South.
Well, I guess the business of being funny today just ain't funny, Fred.
Radio humor has become a serious mass-produced enterprise, demanding material to fill 18 hours a day, and in the process leaving its exhausted perpetrators, writers and actors both, mark you, with naught but blank expressions and trembling hands.
Fred, now what about the future, Fred? You think will things get any better? For instance, will we laugh more tomorrow?
Well, the only way I can answer that question is to ask another question. Will we slow down tomorrow? Now, all humor, in my opinion, should be created and disseminated in an atmosphere of relaxation. There should be time to think humor, time to tell humor, and to enjoy humor. Maybe with men working fewer hours in the day and finding more leisure, the quality of our humor will improve. But I have my doubts. And certainly, radio works against all of this.
Well, you see little hope, then, for humor in radio?
Well, where there's life, of course, there's always hope, Ben. But the present-day trend, to me, it seems to be in the wrong direction. Now, look, I never thought that I would live to see the day when I'd have to compete with a washing machine and $300,000. Iceboxes are replacing actors and musicians. The idea is, of course, if you can't entertain people, give them something. Now, if that isn't a sorry commentary on contemporary entertainment, then I don't know a sorry commentary when I see one. And I have seen some sorry commentaries. I'm an authority on sorry commentaries, as a matter of fact.
Fred, but look, there's a new thought about what about television?
Well, television, I'm afraid, is going to make it worse, Ben. In the beginning, as you know, television drove people out of the saloons into their homes. But now people have sets in their homes. Television is driving them out of their homes back into the saloons.
Oh, no, wait a minute. But as a new source of humor, Fred?
Oh, new source of humor. So far, it's nothing but a throwback, reviving the vaudeville approach to everything, from mugging to juggling. But who can tell, Ben? Television is doing such great things in drama. Who knows? It may find the answer to what is lacking in American humor today.
Well, that brings us, Fred, to the last question of all.
So what?
So what? Well, if you've summed up, so shall I. We can take hope from the fact that regardless of what radio and television are doing to it, humor will never die. Yes, maybe if we can find a common bond in humor to stop the fussing, fighting, and feuding in the world, we might actually laugh our way into peace. In the final analysis, laughter is the universal language of mankind, and a little nonsense now and then is relished by the wisest men.
1,000 thanks, Fred Allen.
Living 1949 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC special program staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Lou Haslam writes the scripts. Music is conducted by Milton Kadams. This program is directed by Jack Cuney. Next week, a drama document on the Marshall Plan, Operation Cooperation. Robert Montgomery stars in Mr. and Mrs. Smith tonight on NBC.
I gotta do that lazy swing again, hey ho, doing the new lowdown. Ba da 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 da. I got my feet to misbehave now. I got a soul that's not for saving now, hey ho, doing the new lowdown. That dancing demon has my feet in a trance, cause while I'm dreaming, I go into that dance. And when you hear that haunting strain to it, I like to bet you go insane to it, hey ho, doing the new lowdown.
Golden Age of Radio on WMKY, Irving Mills and the Harlem Footwarmers with Doing the New Lowdown from 1928. We also heard The State of American Humor with Ben Grauer and Fred Allen, first broadcast on radio on January 30th, 1949. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at wmky.org.